When I was younger, I grew up in the countryside of Japan. And what that meant was I spent a lot of my time playing in the rice paddies and exploring the hillsides and having fun outdoors. When I got into the upper elementary school ages, that was when I really got into hiking and mountain climbing. There's a place near Kobe where there's a mountain, and you climb the mountain, and there's a big lake near the top of it. We had gone on this hiking trip and climbed up the mountain, and I was so amazed. It was the first time I had ever experienced hiking up this mountain and seeing this big lake at the top. And I drew on that inspiration when we were working on the Legend of Zelda game, and we were creating this grand outdoor adventure where you go through these narrow, confined spaces and come upon this great lake. And so it was around that time that I really began to start drawing on my experiences as a child and bringing that into game development. Link's name comes from the fact that originally, the fragments of the Triforce were supposed to be electronic chips. The game was to be set in both the past and the future. And as the main character would travel between both and be the link between them, they called him Link. We named the protagonist Link because he connects people together. I said the name Link came from his role as a connector. But Link is you, the player. Welcome to Razzle Dazzle, a podcast where we talk about our favorite video games and all things pop culture with an emphasis on our favorites. I'm your host, Jared, and joining me today on this very special episode is longtime guest Richard Chinqui from WGCU and Three Song Stories.
Hello!
And our second guest is a singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist who was selected for season 12 of NBC's The Voice, and since that appearance, she's moved on to partner with several multi-platinum songwriters and artists. She's also the founder of The Femme Collective, a nonprofit that hosts events in support of women and equality in the industry. It's Sheena Brooke.
Hi!
With all that being said, it's Razzle Dazzle time! Richard, Sheena, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of The Legend of Zelda.
Thank you.
Of course.
So what we're going to do here, what the aim is, I've noticed that we've, on the show, have covered specific games. So we've covered the Minish Cap, which is my favorite Zelda game of all time. And also we've done Breath of the Wild, because how are we not going to talk about Breath of the Wild? I know, I remember this from that episode, that we were like, oh, we got to do a part two because there's so much to talk about. And there is, but like, that's not going to happen. So we're going to just do a general overall view of the series, our favorite things about it, the things we love, how it impacts us, and so on and so forth. So to kick us off, I want to ask you guys, when you start a new save file in a Zelda game, you know, you hear the fairy fountain theme and stuff, and you get to choose your name, do you choose Link or insert yourself? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you start it?
I always go Link.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, like, I am Link in the moment of playing.
Yeah, so because I knew the character's name was Link the first time I played the first Zelda game,
yeah,
I put that in, and that's actually the reason that while I'll rename a bunch of characters in an RPG, you know, from the default name, but the main character, like Chrono is always Chrono.
Yeah, Cloud is always Cloud.
Cloud is Cloud, because when I was little, Link was Link, and I was like, that just makes sense.
That's his name, and that's like the whole purpose of his character. He is the link between you and the Zelda games. So, Sheena, I want to start with you.
Okay.
What is your first Zelda game / experience you've had?
My very first experience was, you have it here on this table.
Really?
This Zelda, I think it was Adventures of Link.
Wow.
Zelda 2.
Right here, five.
And my brother got it because he had a Nintendo, and I could not get him away from it to play.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, getting in physical fights, like, just legit, like, trying to get a moment to play this game. I was really, really bad at it, but he was such a gamer when we were kids, but I would sneak in and, like, try to play a little bit. And that was my favorite. And I remember this gold
cartridge
with the sword
and
just being like,
the cliffs,
I need to play this.
The pink sky.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, I need to play this now.
Wow, and what an interesting way to start with Zelda 2.
I know, like, I mean, I don't even know if he played the first one. I didn't. Like, I just tried to play this. I always tried to get in there and get that one.
And it's so different than, like, the standard Zelda game. Like, if any games are as different as they can be in the same series, Zelda 2 is it.
Yeah, it'd be like that or Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, but, like, Hyrule Warriors still has, like, dungeon.
Yeah, that's true. It's the least like the others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a similar experience. So I had a Nintendo. I remember getting it, like, for my birthday when I was, seven or so. But I had The Adventures of Link first, and I had seen my aunt play the original one, so I knew this character, but I had never played. I'd always just watched her play, and then I was like, oh, I'm so excited to boot it up, and I put it in, and I started it, and the screen where you start in the, like, in the bedroom, and Zelda's already, like, you know, comatose.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, that's how that world starts for me. Like, in my head, because it's just, it starts you there. You're standing there, and she's like, Link. They're like, Link, go save the princess. Go. And then you go, and there's no other instructions, really.
Yeah.
And there's something about, I think, that version of it being your first one, because the random encounters, you have to manage your health in a very specific way. There are towns. There are towns in other games, but it doesn't feel the same when you're going in and out of the houses.
In Zelda 1, there wasn't any towns.
Oh, that's true, too. It's just the world, yeah.
And I think as, like, a young person, going in and out of houses was, like, my favorite thing. I was like, what's in here?
Go down in the basement, talk to that guy that's always down there.
Yeah, like, I was always even in the new games, like, going into towns is some of my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, like, the whole bit of, like, all these RPG characters just walking into random people's houses without permission and stuff. I mean, like, they call you out on that in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
In Impa's house. Yep. You know, that's great. My first experience, it's kind of a toss-up between... It was the 25th anniversary for the Zelda series, right? And for anybody that has a 3DS, Nintendo released, like, Four Swords 25th anniversary edition for free, for everyone. Anybody can download it, so that's technically my first Zelda game that I owned. But I remember specifically going to a Best Buy with my mom one day, and she was, like, doing whatever she needed to do, like, return an item or shop or whatever, and she told me, go to the games, and they have, like, this kiosk with a demo, and it was the Wii at the time, and they had Skyward Sword as a demo. You get to play the first 30 minutes of the game for, like, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the series and stuff like that, and I spent, like, a good hour just sitting there playing the Skyward Sword demo in that kiosk, and that was, like, I think my first ever real experience with a Zelda game until, like, I played Four Swords with my cousins. So, yeah, it's not even until years later where I, like, got Hyrule Warriors for the Wii U, which is, I would say, my first real introduction to the series, which is a weird...
That's interesting.
A weird way to go, you know?
Had you played Destiny Warriors?
No. Dynasty Warriors?
Dynasty Warriors? Sorry, Destiny Warriors. You not played any of those?
No, I didn't know what any
so
of this was.
This is like a new genre of game for you, actually.
It's a new genre of a series that I'm not familiar with, where after, like, I finished playing Hyrule Warriors, I'm like, oh, I know all these characters from all these different games, because, you know, it's like Multiverse of Madness or whatever, where, like, characters from Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, Wind Waker, all in one. I'm like, okay, I want to know where Sheik is from. I want to know where Daruni is from. I want to know where Midna is from. And so that kind of, like, made me expand my horizons to search out, like, more Zelda games. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does. It makes me think of a fictional world where there was a Hyrule Racers game.
Sure.
Where you could have all of the different characters from the different properties, and you might go, okay, this isn't a Zelda game.
Yeah.
But, like, now I want to know all these characters.
Yeah. I love that you're talking about the Wii. You're making me feel, like, 100,000 years old.
I know. This is why I keep Jared around.
But I try.
I did get a Wii, but I never got to play. I had it really briefly. Somebody gave me a Wii, and I never got to play any of the Zelda games in it. It just didn't really last for me, that console.
Jared, was there ever actually a motion-controlled one-to-one sword Zelda game?
Skyward Sword.
Skyward Sword works that way?
Yeah.
Okay, because that was right when I wasn't really playing.
Gotcha. So. That's where you fell out?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was paying attention to ones that I didn't play, Skyward Sword, I wasn't even paying attention when that came out.
Oh.
Because I never had a Wii. That's the gap.
Gotcha.
And then they re-released Skyward Sword.
They did for the Switch.
The Switch.
I might have to get that. You always wanted to swing the Master Sword with your arm. You still can. Yeah.
And if you have a Wii U, like, well, I'm one of the few
people. No one has a Wii U.
I have a Wii U. I'm one of the few people who actually care about the Wii U, you know? I never had a Wii, so, like, the Wii U was my first, like, no, it's not my first console. The GameCube was my first console. The Wii U was, like, my next console, you know?
I did have a GameCube, yeah.
Yeah? What's weird is, like, you saying you have a Wii and a GameCube, and just in those two consoles alone, and you can play GameCube games on the Wii, you have access to so many Zelda games.
I know.
Good ones.
I think, like, what happened is, like, I got a GameCube. I loved my GameCube.
Yeah.
I played it for, like, that first kind of initial...
The honeymoon.
Honeymoon of it. And then, you know, I started getting older and very busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you fall off. I think I played Spyro. I think I never... You know, and kind of a couple of those little games, and then like a Ratchet and Clank.
Yep.
And before I could really be like, wait, where's the Zelda game? You know, and get back there, you know, I kind of stopped playing.
Yeah.
And then someone got me, like, gave me a Wii, and then, you know, I never really even got into that. And it just, looking back, I'm like, man, I now as an adult, I'm like, okay, I need to buy all of them and make a room. And like that kind of dream thing as a kid, like, I want every console plugged in. Ready to go. You know?
That's so real.
And especially for the GameCube, I think Wind Waker is maybe it's not only adorable, but it's like a really clever package for the IP.
Because
it's still like this open world thing, but they make you navigate islands, and the cell shading is so gorgeous comparatively, like the style.
Yeah.
It stands on its own in a way that I have my favorites, and I know we're gonna talk about those. Mm-hmm. And it's not my favorite, but it's great. It's spectacular, and I feel like it should have probably been a GameCube flagship. I think that if they knew it was in, I don't even know if they had it, you know, lined up.
Right.
But if they had it, you know, a runway for it, because it looked so great and because it was so tight technically, like the combat in it is, people looked at it and saw a cartoon, but like the timing and the like dodge
the parries,
and parry mechanics.
Yeah.
Like there are, it is like, it's like somebody working for FromSoft. Like on one of the Souls games, was like, I'm gonna make a Zelda game, but we gotta fool people because it can't look scary.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really good. So.
My wife's gonna be so mad when I come home and be like, I bought a GameCube.
Now, you know, do you know that about two blocks from here?
Oh, yeah.
There's a store called 8-Bit Heroes, and they have.
I thought it was arcade. 8-Bit Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame. Oh, Hall of Fame. Yeah,
yep.
8-Bit Hall of Fame.
Sorry.
It's right up the road, and they have, like, a wall of old consoles that you can buy.
Oh, my gosh.
And then shelves and shelves of used games.
I'm going to relive my childhood.
Yeah, I knew that I was home when I walked in because the back wall is all, like, game albums, like vinyls.
Yeah.
But they're not just display. Like,
oh,
they're selling records. And I went in there, and I was like, oh, this will hopefully connect a little bit. I hope I'm not jumping ahead too much.
Oh, you're good.
These guys were out downtown before in a little shop. Their shop got flooded out by the hurricane, and they were featured on... We carried a story about them when we were doing our coverage here at the station because, you know, people were finding their stuff far from their house.
Yeah.
And downtown, after it had drained out, you know, there was kind of nothing to do. People were walking around just going like, look at it.
Yeah.
And if you're running a vintage game store, it's really obvious which stuff is yours.
Oh,
because
yeah.
he was finding cartridges like a half mile away.
Oh my God.
And I remember the reporter saying like, is this salvageable? And he goes, no, these are cards. So like seawater, he's like, these are all done. And so he's like, we're just hoping to clean up and move on. And so when I was over there for just like to get some ice cream or something in the plaza, they're right by the Kilwins. So I like I saw the sign and I was like, wait, that's those people. And I walked in and it's amazing in there. And I had to go in and just shake his hand and be like, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad that it's all up and running.
I'm going to be so late getting home.
Swing by on the way. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been purposely avoiding that place.
Yeah,
I
want to
go.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
I want to go, but like, I don't have the money. And I know, like, I'm going to spend money.
They have everything there.
I have my wife is like just enough of a game lover. She's definitely not, like, she loved Zelda and likes it, but she won't sit and play.
Yeah.
I disappear and she's like, where is she? I gotta get, and then, you know, so she's not that. She's just enough that I could probably take her there.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, yeah, let's do a game room.
Oh my goodness.
So that's the trick. I just gotta take her and be like, look how cool this is.
Yeah. Don't you want this at our home? I mean, I know I do.
Yeah, she would be into it, so I'll have to drag her over there.
If you want to play for those haters of the Wii U, if you want, the only way.
I don't hate it. I just don't know.
I'm not saying you. I'm mainly just hazing Richard.
Nobody bought it. I don't have a problem with it.
Game Explain did a story.
Yeah.
Not too long. I guess by the time this episode releases, a long time ago. The sales of the Wii U in 2023 has increased dramatically. You want to know the number?
That's a crazy statement.
You want to know the number?
Yeah, what's the number?
Why?
One.
Yeah, that'll do it. That's a dramatic increase.
Dramatic increase of one.
But Twilight Princess and The Wind Waker have HD versions on the Wii U.
Which is great. Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, great way to play it. I have Wind Waker for the Wii U and Twilight Princess for the GameCube, so like, yeah. So, Sheena, what was your first Zelda game then?
That I bought for myself, honestly, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah?
Yeah, like I got busy. It's such a long story of my life. I, you know, was like a totally different person. And then as I kind of came out, I found happiness, it seems like such a dramatic story, but it is part of it. Like, I found happiness in who I was and the ability to be myself, which included going, I love to play video games. I want a video game. And I got a Switch for Christmas. My wife bought me a Nintendo Switch, not knowing her future of losing me to it.
The seeds we sowed.
So she bought me the Switch for Christmas, and I started playing the Switch, and then we actually were talking about Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And that leading me to go like, I know this, what is this? And going, oh my God, I have to have Zelda. And then I think I logged like 200 hours into Zelda like in like a week, 2 weeks.
Wow. I 100% completed Breath of the Wild, and it took me 210 hours.
Oh man. Now are you like, I like to play completely through the game without any mods or extras at least once.
Yeah. Oh. A cinematic experience.
Yes,
me too.
I want that cinematic experience before I start using, like, I have the cards. What are they called? They're usually action figures. Amiibos.
Oh yeah.
I have like Amiibo cards
love
and
Amiibos.
Stuff. But I love them, like, but I try not, like, especially that first Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Which actually feels much different, was much different for me than Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh.
Of just like that first moment of getting into that game, I just had to play it raw.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually go back and forth because one of my best friends in this whole world, he and I play a lot, and a lot of times he'll want to launch into a new game in co-op. Mm. And I'm like, man. I don't want to talk a lot, or a simple example is, you know, like you, Jared, he is a completionist.
Yep.
So this is, every gamer knows this feeling when you're coming up on a T-shaped hallway intersection and you're like, okay, there are bad guys over there. So I got to check this way first, because if I go that way, I might never come back here.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a hidden thing.
Yeah.
But like, I go where the bad guys are, because that's where the story's going.
I think
there's like a resource or something, but if he's like, there are like hidden cassette tapes behind boxes, sometimes underneath closets. And I'm like, I'm not going to
check every closet.
I can't crawl over every pixel of this game when the narrative is that, like,
yes,
the world is melting.
The narrative.
And so, but if we're playing together, then I have to watch him do that while I wait.
Yeah,
And so usually I'll tell him, like, I'm gonna burn it down, and then we'll play a second pass through, because I think it's a different experience.
Yeah.
And everybody plays games for different reasons. Like, for him, that's that. But for me, it's about, like, all the stuff, the content inside of the game.
The checklist.
Yeah, like, he's like, look at all these things that got made.
Yeah.
And for me, it's probably split between exploring a narrative that's, like, really immersive, that you can't get from, like, a movie because you're playing it.
Yeah.
And also the challenge of sometimes developers are like, here, try to figure out how to beat this.
Yeah.
And then you have to figure it out. Between those two things, and both of those are kind of like circumvented by like Amiibo type thing.
Do
you know what? I mean, you'll remember Game Genie. Oh, maybe not.
I don't think
maybe
I
I'm just that
Game
little
Genie.
Bit. Just that little bit old. Wait, how old are you, Sheena?
I'm 40.
I'm 40.
Look at us, twins.
Okay. All right, look. All right.
My wife says that I actually grew up 10 years later.
Mm.
So she would say that I'm younger.
That's
based on my, like,
that's
I grew
funny.
Up pretty sheltered in a lot of ways. And so
yeah,
there's a lot I'm...
there was a product for cartridge-based games in for NES and SNES and for the Sega Genesis and probably like the 32X. You would put a thing that was kind of shaped like a cartridge into the actual console, and then the cartridge was in that.
Wait, maybe I do know what that is.
And so it was an interface. It was a go-between. So it could boot the game. But because it was an interface, it could also impact element like code base. So you could, you know, you put your Zelda game in the Game Genie. You put the Game Genie in the Nintendo. And then when it boots, it's like a Game Genie menu.
Yes.
And you can say, like, what game are you playing? This one. And then you put in what codes you want. So, like, and it just came with a manual. So it said, like, do you want no damage? Put that code in. And you would just play it that way.
Infinite money.
Like, to have such little technology back then, but actually someone create something like a Game Genie.
Yeah.
Like, where now, it's like, I could mod pretty much anything.
Yeah.
In any way.
Yeah.
If I really wanted to. And, like, play as different characters or whatever. Like, there's just so many options if I want to dig in and do it that are for someone who's not a techie, you know, person. But, like, back then, just to be able to make something like that, to me, like, fascinates me. Because, like, here is this big piece of plastic.
Yeah.
Stick it in there. It's going to do something
different. It's the right
different.
Shape of metal.
Yeah. It's just, like, really interesting.
Jared and I were talking the other week about, I was hearing this music kind of rant / diatribe by a streamer about, he was making this analysis, and it really struck me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really worth talking about, that, like, there was this perfect little window where game music composition might have actually peaked. And not because it's worse now, but because at one point you really couldn't do almost anything because they had like two channels. And now it's just a file. So like anything that can be recorded in real can just be played back in the game. And so like there's technically more freedom now. I mean, not technically, there is. There just flat is more freedom to do whatever you want now. But around the early 2000s on the first and second PlayStations and on the Super Nintendo and definitely on the 64, they had suddenly a lot more music channels, but still it was so limited that the composers like Koji Kondo and Yasunori Matsuda. Like they had to...
Grant Kirko.
They had to layer things very carefully because there's no horns. There's a thing that goes... like a horn. So
and
like
then they had to create, like, compose. Because these are like real composers.
Yeah.
Composing music out of like computer sounds.
Yeah, like 8-channel.
It's pretty, right? And, pretty incredible.
And so
to think about it like that.
So in the analysis, the comparison is the current Final Fantasy VII soundtrack and the original Final Fantasy VII soundtrack, because the same songs are on both. Mm-hmm. And obviously the orchestrated ones are richer.
Yeah.
But they're not clearer. And Jared can back me up. We listened like back and forth on the original soundtrack. Some of those melodies and some of the harmonies are more obvious and easier to follow. Not because there's less stuff, but because stuff gets out of the way of each other. And I really like the idea that the restriction breeds like genius. Like you said, like with the plastic, like we want to cheat. Okay, well that's a chip. Okay, well I'll make a chip that chip fits into, and then that will tell the game what to do.
There's definitely a genius to that. I think as a musician too, just like we were talking about music and video games, and like there is something like it's just so overlooked.
Yeah.
Just a huge overlook of just genius composition. Mm.
There are plenty of video games with amazing soundtracks. Yeah. Hell, the entire Zelda series is
We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's one of the core elements of what makes Zelda Zelda is the composition, is the music.
Yeah.
So especially like A Link to the Past is probably the most solidified version of a 2D Zelda game. Just those beeps and bloops of iconic themes now. Just the compositions of the Zelda games it's incredible. Like comparing Link to the Past, like original Super Nintendo to what was it? A Link Between Worlds, which is basically a remake, but still a different game. Same music, same exact like songs, but it's different. The technology is different. The limitations, therefore, creating and forcing Koji Kondo to really extract as much as they can through a sound chip back in the day, compared to now, where they have a lot of freedom. But like, also, what parts are important of an original like 16-bit sounding game can be overshadowed through like orchestral version. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you picked the, I mean, Ocarina.
Ocarina of Time.
Right? So like, if you want to talk about restrictions on the composer, and this was in that thing too, so yeah. I'm not, this is not an original thought, but like, you tell your composer, you're going to use this limited chipset, you're going to make a bunch of songs, because this game is built around the idea of this musical instrument. Oh, and by the way, your player can only access 8 notes on this instrument.
Yeah.
And because it's a fixed wind instrument, they have to be in the same key. So you need to play all of these. I need you to write, like, whatever there are, what, Jared, like a dozen or so? Maybe
over
a little
a
more? Yeah. Like melodies that have to be able to be broken down into 6-note triggers.
Yeah.
So that you can remember them.
It's kind of 3, because you just gotta repeat the first 3.
That's true, it's the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Is it
most
always,
of them.
Is it always, yeah, some of them are not.
Not
but,
4 for like,
but like
the later dungeons.
But that's even harder, yeah. Right? Okay, so like, I need you to like track these all, but they all need to be in the same key, and the hard melody trigger needs to be like a few notes,
yeah.
So it needs to be really memorable. Go. Oh, and they need to be different from each other. They need to really sound and feel.
There's a math to that.
Oh my gosh,
including
yeah.
the creativity, which yeah. some people would argue that music is math.
It is.
But there's a creative element
yeah.
of saying, like, I need this to sound good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
To just feel right.
Yeah.
But also it has to fit in the math.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if I was approaching it, if I would do first interesting melody stuff because I knew they all had to kind of be different from each other, differentiate mm-hmm. them, and then expand into, like, the really pretty songs that come out of them. Or if I would write the songs first
and then add the melody.
And then try to figure out, like, what part of this can I force like into the player's hands mm-hmm. because something like the Kokiri Forest one right dun 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 mm-hmm. is what's the is that the is that what
Lost
you
Woods.
Play the, yeah
yes.
but for Lost Woods to teleport
yes.
right it's dun 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 that's what you play
that's Saria song dun dun dun, dun
right
dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. So that one's easy because it's dead on the melody
yeah
right when you think about like the is it Elegy of Light what is the what's the one to go to the temple
which one the Spirit Temple
the Spirit Temple no the time one
Temple of Time?
Temple of Time. Okay, right, but so the melody that you that's but you don't play those notes to trigger it.
Right.
You just play the first.
The first right? 3, yeah.
Yeah. So like working trying to figure out how to make these accessible to the player in a way that you can like, oh, I'm going to play this song because you don't want to look it up every time.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of one of the magics of that game is that you're like, I'm going to play this magic song and then you just start playing it
yeah.
and then a thing happens. Epona just shows up, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know,
I wonder which way that the composer did that.
I have no, yeah.
Wouldn't that be fascinating to know? Because a part of me as a writer would say, I've got to make the music sound good first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then figure out what
but
are the key notes.
But there is a gift to the people that compose this type of music.
Koji Kondo is
that
just,
he might not,
I mean,
he probably just like fucking farted in the wind.
Yep.
And it was like, here's a masterpiece.
I think that there are people like, so like, I think that it's entirely possible, even likely, that Koji Kondo is much like John Williams in the story that I heard only recently about how when he wrote that initial Harry Potter
yeah.
melody that was extemporaneous. They just told him what the movie was about. They're like, it's like a boy and he finds out he's a wizard and he goes to a school
and then boom
and then he was like
iconic
dun 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 dun, dun, dun like that and they were like yeah just more do more and that's how he was like I can hear that and they were like okay cool
it's like he's hearing a picture
yeah.
And I think
maybe they
like,
have synesthesia.
Seriously, yeah. I think there's a thing that these people have that is just a different gift.
Yeah.
Like I could never wrap my head around.
You said Breath of the Wild is like the game you're playing now, or Tears of the Kingdom.
Tears
right?
of the Kingdom I'm playing now.
Yeah. Yeah. Want to know a little something about Richard?
Oh boy.
Uh-oh, I do.
He hasn't touched or know anything about
neither
Breath
of, them.
Of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, neither.
Is it intentional? Like you're just like.
It's everything I do is intentional, but it's not a principal position.
Oh.
It's that. So I have an 11-year-old.
Wow.
Okay.
And I guess we're gonna talk about this. For years, her bedtime story was just me telling her the narrative of Ocarina of Time. I was like, I'm just going to tell you a bedtime story, but it's going to take like a long time because, you know, she'd pass out. And so the next day I'd say, what's the last thing you remember? And so we started with like Link's Dream and we
this
ended.
This feels
with...
like the intro to The Princess Bride. Like it was like that a lot.
And she was really invested, and she knew it was a video game. Mm-hmm. When I say this started, so I started doing that probably when she was like four or so.
Oh my god, I love this.
And when we finished Ocarina, she's like, are there more Link stories? So I told her Link to the Past. And so between those two, that's been enough that we don't do bedtime stories at night anymore. She's 11. Like,
yeah.
But she has dabbled in some of the games. And okay. So I said, I will get her Breath of the Wild, but I want her to play Ocarina first because she already has engagement with it. And I really want to see her like push on it because Breath of the Wild, I want to do like together. I want to explore it. Because I haven't played it. But for Ocarina, I wanted
to
like...
So you're waiting to play it with your daughter.
So she just needs to unlock it. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. That's a great reason.
Yeah, and then I don't want to play it first. I want to like play it with her.
There's a lot of points that I want to like talk about.
Yeah.
around this one, this is a nexus of like branching paths of what I want to talk about here. So one, I just want to quickly bring up last Christmas, I believe, I gifted Richard and his daughter like... manga sets of various Zelda stories, like official Dark Horse Comics Zelda mangas of telling Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Phantom Hourglass, Minish Cap.
Yeah.
So, like, she's no longer telling bedtime stories, but she can read
those.
She's
reading them.
She has that opportunity. So, I'm glad you brought up Ocarina of Time. There is a big connection, Sheena, between Ocarina of Time, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, and Skyward Sword.
Cool.
I have talked with you about this. I mentioned this with you a long time ago, Richard. But these four games, all are the only Zelda games that have a perfect 10 out of 10 score.
Oh, right. I remember. Yeah, we looked up the list. Yeah.
For multiple gaming review sites or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think you know the story of Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. You know Ocarina of Time. You know the similarities between story moments of Ocarina of Time and especially Tears of the Kingdom, right?
Yeah.
There is this one director. I forget his name. I have it like ready to pull up. Give me one second.
Sure.
His name is Hidemaro Fujibayashi. He is the director of Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild, and Skyward Sword, and I'm pretty sure he worked on Ocarina of Time with Eiji Aonuma, which of course Eiji Aonuma worked on all these games. There is something between these games that I think has to do with Fujibayashi that makes these games relatively perfect, you know? And you can just see the similarities between Ocarina of Time and Skyward Sword within Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. Skyward Sword, up in the sky, right? Tears of the Kingdom, we get exactly that. Ocarina of Time is the first ever, air quotes, open world at the time, Zelda game. Mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild now is an actual open world game. So like, Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild are just Skyward Sword and Ocarina like combined somehow. Mm-hmm. And just the story elements with it, there's so much to dive into there. And I just think it's fascinating.
I'm still like in the middle of it.
Okay, but you should still know enough.
Yeah.
See the similarities.
I can see it.
Yeah.
It's really great, though. I mean, it is good. I don't know if it gives you the same. Like, I really hope when you start Breath of the Wild that you have that. There's a moment in the very first scene where you just go, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's just, like, this moment in that game.
It takes your breath away.
Yes, it really does. And I didn't necessarily have that for Tears of the Kingdom.
Right.
But I think it's just because it's very, like, sequel. And it almost is, like, immediate. Like, I feel like I never stopped playing Breath of the Wild.
Yeah,
right.
Except for when I'm looking for something to attach to my arrow.
But I think that's
annoying. It's probably the only thing that they've done where I'm like, bro.
But I think that might be true for when you go from Ocarina to Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because when you play Ocarina the first time, you're like, wow, like this is a world. They've got all these things. I can go all these places.
Yeah.
I can travel around. I can affect the weather. But when you play Majora's, there's crazy stuff going on, but you never have that. It's more of it,
which is kind of like lovely. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that because Breath of the Wild, when it was done, I was like, I need more. I want more.
Yeah,
so, play the DLC.
Yeah. And so like, there's definitely. Do you have a favorite part of the DLC?
Oh my god, I love Cass as a character.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that the fish?
No, that's the bird.
The bard. Oh.
The bard
one
bird.
That plays the accordion. Yeah, I love the like extra champion stuff, but also just fighting Monk Maskosha. Yeah. That's such a great fight.
That's a great fight.
Yeah.
I really loved getting... Oh, is this going to ruin this for you? This DLC thing?
It's not narrative story related.
Stuff,
you're fine. You're good.
The motorcycle.
Yeah.
That's not going to.
Okay. And like...
Well, that's funny because when we play Mario Kart, that's what I ride on.
It just feels right. You get it, and there's just like this moment where you're like, finally, I've been running way too fucking slow. But Zelda needs to hurry up.
Oh, do you know why it always felt
and
right?
I love that.
Because he rides a horse.
Yeah.
I'd never considered, okay, when I said everything I do is intentional, that is an inside joke because everything I do is actually, like, I overanalyze all my choices, and I never stopped to consider why it always felt right that I was like, Link doesn't go in a car, he goes on a motorcycle, but like, why? Oh, it's because he has a horse.
Yeah. He has a horse, man.
Did you ever get Epona in?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be doing that.
I actually did I get Epona?
Because you unlock her with the amiibo.
Yes.
Yeah.
I cheated. I have amiibo cards because like, I don't have room for all that, and they're super expensive. By the time you try to get them all, so I have a stack, like a huge stack of amiibo cards.
In my daughter's Switch case is a Ziploc bag.
Yep.
With a pile of them. Yeah. It's a mess.
I have all but one. Like physical Zelda amiibo. I'm just missing the Skyward Sword Link amiibo, but I have every single one, and I already pre-ordered Zelda and Ganondorf one.
Because they're really cool. I'm just like, man, like with $10-$12 a pop.
They're 15.
I think I spent like $30 and I got like 40 cards.
Exactly.
But, you know, I did go to, speaking of Switch, I do some work with Bose, and I got to go to the Best Buy convention that they do.
Yo.
And so there's a big, gigantic Nintendo booth. Yo. It's like a con for Best Buy, and there's a Nintendo booth. And the first one I did, they featured Zelda. It was before Tears of the Kingdom came out, so I got to play it. They gave me like a special edition pen.
You got to play Tears of the Kingdom early?
Yeah.
Oh my
God. It was really cool.
That
like
is very
I was
cool.
like only a few Yo. Things and I was like, okay, now I have to have this immediately.
Yeah.
I immediately put on pre-order. But yeah, it was cool. So I got to like they had like a big statue of Zelda.
Yeah.
Out with his arm.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to kind of see this character in real life. It was really rad.
You just did the thing.
And then, what did I do?
He just called
the
him.
The one thing Zelda
he
fans.
He called him Zelda.
Oh my God, I did the thing.
Because, no, the only reason I knew that was because I know the statue because they put it in the Nintendo World in New York.
With this gigantic sign that says Zelda behind it, so I'm picturing it in my mind. This big giant thing.
It's
blank.
This because I've got the clits.
I'm immediately, yeah, it's yeah. that. That's cool.
Yeah, there's in New York.
I know, I'm picturing the Zelda behind it, and I said it.
No, it's the best
thing
that
happened. They're going to be, like, listening, and they're going to be like, what's all this dead beeping air? I'm like, that's Sheena.
We
erased her from the universe for calling Link Zelda.
That's probably going to be the clip of this episode.
It just, beep, beep. Oh, man, that's awful.
Shame on me.
No. I think that's how we bonded, even when we first met. I was like, ew, his name is Link.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Because you did. You made the joke.
I did. Yeah. Like Jared and I were talking, and I was talked about something.
Yeah. Oh no.
Something like that.
He came. And he was like, Sheena made the thing. She said the thing.
Where
it's like it's backwards, but she like yeah. So there you go.
So
you,
and now I've un-
know
I have
better.
Undone it.
No.
I've undone it.
That's a good segue for something I want to bring up. So, no stranger to anybody here, Richard and I are part of Three Song Stories. And Sheena, you were also a guest on Three Song Stories a few months ago. And please, everybody who's listening to this, go listen to Sheena's episode on Three Song Stories. It's amazing. Mm. And towards the end, there's a little bit where she mentions she likes video games and she likes Zelda. And I immediately like interrupted. And I'm like, Zelda? You said Zelda? we had a nice little moment. And she was like, oh, hold on. To do a podcast where we talk about Zelda, and Mike and I was like, well, hey, he has covered. A podcast. So that's where all this started. But what I want to bring up is, so Three Song Stories, we tell biography through music, right? So we all choose songs that are important or play an important part in our lives, or we have a strong emotional connection or a story to go along with it. Richard and I, of course, have been guests on the show, and we both had Zelda songs as our song stories. Mm-hmm. So I want to take this moment to start off with Richard's song story. I have the clip of like him telling it for the pilot episode. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play this for us now, and then we'll just reflect on it after. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right, so time for song number two. What do you got?
Song number two is going to be, it's a song called Lon Lon Ranch, or Eponia's Song. It comes from a video game.
Not just a video game.
The video game. It comes from The Legend of Zelda 64, which also kind of harkens from that era. But like the other, like Enter Sandman, it has a couple of stories. It's actually kind of followed me for a while.
So where's that one take you? Because it looked like it took you a long way.
Yeah, so I'm a big video game guy. I've played my whole life. And I've always loved the stories that games can deliver you to, or deliver to you both ways, really. And sometimes the music is really, really strong. But the reason that song took me a long way, like you just said, is the day that my daughter was born, the first night that Chrissy was sleeping and I had her, like the first time I got to hold her really for more than a minute, she was fidgety and crying like a newborn is, and that is the first song that I ever kind of sang, hummed to her, and it worked. And I didn't have a plan. Like, I just was holding her, and I was just like, let me hum this song that I remember from 15 years ago. And I did my best to remember what it sounded like, and she fell asleep, and I just sat there for, I think, 3 hours, you know, in a dark hospital room, and it's still her lullaby. She's 5 now, and if she ever has a, you know, a bad dream and comes into our room looking for me to take her back into her bed, that's what she says. She's hum, hum, and she falls immediately. It's almost like a spell. Like, I hum it, she passes out. So it is a song that has been with me since early adolescence, and now again, like, I'm still living with it.
How did that song come to your mind at that point?
It was very early in the morning, and none of us had slept, and I was trying to think of something that had no words so that I wouldn't wake Chrissy up with the sound of it, I guess, and it's the first thing I thought to hum. It's like, something about, you heard it, the melody is really strong, like it repeats throughout.
It's also soothing.
It's very soothing. It sounds almost like a lullaby. So it popped up, and I started humming, and I felt her kind of start to slack in my arms, and just it's the go-to. She's probably heard that song. If I added up all the time I've hummed that song, I could probably fill a few CDs worth of, like.
Does she know its origin?
She knows the name.
She hasn't heard the original. She hasn't played Zelda.
She has not played Zelda yet. She has.
Is that going to blow her mind?
Probably when she hears it in the game. She's heard she's heard versions on YouTube. I've played it before, and she's like, "That's my song." Mm-hmm. So I get to her. It's her song, I guess. But no, she hasn't played. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited. It's part of the reason I picked it is because also, like, that's a pretty big facet of my life is games and gaming, and it's a really strong theme it's Zelda. It's an icon.
Perhaps a first dance at a wedding someday?
Don't
want to blow your mind.
Yeah, maybe. It might be a little cheesy for me for that, but you know what? If she likes it enough, then I'll dance to whatever she picks.
Richard?
Yeah.
Want to reflect?
What that guy said, you know? yeah, it's... Okay, so first I have to say that one of the proudest moments in that story for me is not, I didn't say it ever in the episode, I don't think, but Or maybe I said it later, but when I went to get the song for the episode, because that was the pilot of our podcast, I was terrified that I was going to hear the song and that the melody was going to be different slightly, like by a note or something, than I had been humming for 5 years.
Yeah.
Because I was just doing it the way I knew it in my head, and it was exactly right. And it made me so happy. That is... You know, I think that, like, if I want to be philosophical about it, it definitely speaks to music and game music and how character themes become part of not only the characters, but because you're a character in the game, like, part of you. Mm-hmm. And that's really strong, right? We know that. Like, Broadway character themes are really strong.
Yeah.
Movie themes are really strong. But I think that, like, as a more personal observation... I forgot that thing that I said at the end about, you know, I played that game when I was probably only a couple years older than Zoe is now. And I didn't think, it's not like I, you know, had Epona's song on my phone or something when my daughter was born. Yeah. I hadn't listened to it in a long time.
Yeah, it just came to mind.
That's... And so the fact that it was able to pluck it out of the ether, mm-hmm. and then it became a regular, like a standard in our house, and now she is... the age where I first found it means that in a really serious way that song has been part of my life, like it's been like with me, and that's a crazy thing to think about, but it's gorgeous in a way that I don't know that almost anything else can be that way than music. And then if you play games, which if you're listening to this you probably do, like music in games has that, I think, doubly so.
Right. Know. That's really beautiful.
Thanks.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's such a, like, beautifully deep story, like, with so much emotion to it, which I just, like, think is great and unexpected in a, you know, podcast like this. It's great. I love it.
To move on, here's my song story. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let myself do the talking. This song is, like, probably the first song you hear when you plug in Hyrule Warriors. And I'm like, I was entranced by it. The scene was Zelda's on a field in front of her castle, in front of Hyrule's castle, and on Hyrule Field, I think. She's playing a harp, playing her song, her lullaby. And then, you know, dark forces start coming, this, that, and the other thing. And just listening to that track, and I'm like, this is beautiful. Legend of Zelda series is known for its composition. The more Zelda games I started playing, the more I started hearing, the more I started understanding why this game is... as great as it is. For me, Zelda's like my number one thing, right? I love this series so much that when thinking about the future, when thinking about having a family or something like that, if I have a daughter, the name Zelda is going to be in her name. The first name or a middle name or a second middle name. My wife and I has got to come to like an understanding here about this.
You could change your last name to Zelda.
Yeah, but like, my name already sounds cool. It sounds like a superhero name,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know? One highlight moment. I was at a Zelda Symphony Orchestra, 2016, 2017. I think they saved Zelda's lullaby like towards the end or something. And I was looking around me and I see everybody listening, not hearing, listening. And I can tell we were all feeling the same way. I would say we were all entranced by the beauty of this song, by the masterpiece Koji Kondo has composed, and it brought me to tears. I still have those tickets. I was showing Sheena earlier, before we started recording, in my Zelda item pouch 3DS case, I still have those two tickets from that symphony orchestra. And that's a memory that will be forever, like, ingrained to my brain, you know? Yeah, and I still want to call my future daughter, if I have one, Zelda. Like, it's going to be her name.
So we talked, I think, when we did that episode about something that you made me realize that I had not considered before about video game music. Mm-hmm. And it was that movies are like collective experience because if we all watch it, we all saw like the same story.
Yeah.
But we never sit around generally and like re-experience the music from a movie. Like there are concerts where people will play like scores or composers' scores, but like those are few and far between. Mm-hmm. And then concerts are a place where we can all sit and experience music, but it's not a collective experience the same way because the music is the content, right? Yeah. We're here to hear this music. But when a bunch of video game people get together and listen to songs from games, when you play, like, here's a song from Bloodborne, here's a song from Zelda, here's a song from Mario, like, you hear them and you go, I remember this entire story, and everyone else here also knows that if they're reacting to it. And that's, I'm trying to think if there's something like that, but there might not be, where we all have a reason to be together in a place for a presentation, which is the music. But that is also like pulling us all back to a singular moment that we all kind of share. I think video game music concerts have something special there.
Because video games in general are more immersive, just like we said before.
Yeah.
You're in it versus watching it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like you're more, the memory is more immersive. Like I participated in this moment as a player versus I viewed this moment as a watcher.
Yeah.
And so it's like that memory is, I think, just like stronger.
Yeah, you're right, because even if it was down here, like the Southwest Florida Symphony will do, like, we're doing our John Williams concert.
Yeah.
So they'll play the Harry Potter theme and people will like that. But I would argue that, your reaction to hearing the theme is probably not the same as your reaction to hearing like the Overworld Zelda theme or like the Final Fantasy Overture. Mm. Like those are songs that like you hear them and you go, you know what happens? You see the whole game probably when you hear those songs. Like all of it comes flooding back.
Versus like I think with movies, like they do the Star Wars, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And there's a trigger reminder, like so like they might play it in the background and then most people are going, oh, I remember this now from this moment because I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
Where like when you hear like the great fairy fountain music,
I don't need
the trigger. I know that's that moment in the game because I did it. Yeah. I brought myself there as a player. And I think that's the difference, that the connection is the participation in the whole narrative of the game.
Absolutely.
Versus like, oh man, this is a beautiful piece. I remember the Imperial March. Mm-hmm. I watched it happen and I know where that happened.
Yeah.
You know, versus it's just more immersive, and so I think in that way the memory is stronger.
Yeah.
Also, with movies, they're played at a certain time within the film. So like, oh yeah, about 30 minutes in, you can hear this theme for whatever. But with a video game, you get to not only, like, at a certain story point, however long it took you to get there, it's there, it can be impressionable, it's memorable. And for certain locations, you can keep coming back to it.
Yeah.
So like Castletown, Lon Lon Ranch. Then you can go to Kakariko Village and then go back, and then still you're listening to that same theme that you love, and it's you know, you can stay there for as long as you want.
Right.
You know, so that can also have an impact of a longer lasting memory. Or does that make sense?
Yeah.
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 It's also because Koji Kondo, if we're talking about skill on composition, it's also the ability to write a song that can loop almost infinitely without you getting like
annoyed at it. Oh my god, it is such a insane gift. I mean,
I can sit in Gerudo Valley in Ocarina and just, that song is amazing, and you just want to hum it instead of be mad that it's starting over and over and over again.
He's basically mastered the art of the earworm. Which is what pop music tries to do. Every time you get in a ride.
That's the goal, right?
The goal is to make something that just sits in your ear and you want to hear it over and over again, and it gets stuck in your head and it kind of just goes and goes and goes. He's done that without anyone noticing. It's intentional without being like
this
in
is
your
the purpose.
Face. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real musically, like, what a gift.
Yeah. Think of all the Mario themes.
Yeah.
That are just like, they're just bouncing around in there basically 24/7.
Boom. Yeah. You already know where that's from. Yeah. Wherever, whatever game you heard it from, there it is, right there. Mental picture.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's really, but I think what's really also interesting is when you're listening to Epona song or the lullaby, or what's the song I like? It's not in Breath of the Wild, The Storm.
Song of Storms.
Song of Storms.
It's really beautiful, and which I think separates. Again, it's like I said it earlier. It's just like something people don't know. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, you don't know. Like just how, like, oh my God, this is a beautifully orchestrated piece of music.
A little tremolo.
Yeah. And like, especially this version. This is like,
it's Ocarina of Time. Yeah.
And then there's an orchestrated version, and you're just going, oh my God, like.
It's just a loop.
And they made this in this bit.
Yeah.
This like computer bit. It really does blow my mind. Like.
Yeah, I know we're looping back there, which I guess is appropriate for that song. Yep. But that's a time travel joke.
Yes, it is.
But the ability to keep, like, there's a little chime sound in there, and how clean that melody is, while an accordion is playing like in a like a syncopated rhythm to it. It's really great, and it's wait, let's see. I know you need that for the graveyard, so it is a canon song. Like, you have
to
learn
that
run, right?
That's for the Spirit Temple.
Yeah, you need it.
Spirit Temple? Yeah. Shadow Temple.
Shadow Temple.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to remember if it was optional or not.
It's not.
Yeah. And so the fact that you can change the weather in that game from a song that you learned, that kind of also questions how you could have learned it, because you inspired the guy who teaches it to you later.
Yeah.
By playing it for him earlier.
Yeah.
They are not fooling around with music in that game. And I look at, not to harp too long on my daughter again, but like, I look at her, she could play it right now. And it's crazy, because I feel like when I played it, I was like, yes, I'm very mature, and these are lots of themes that are interesting and deep and hard to tangle with. And I look at her and I'm like, how could you understand these things? But she could. Yeah. Like, so I think that that's also one of the things that has always made Zelda really great. And a lot of games are like this, but I think Zelda maybe shines among them in that it respects its players, who it knows are often going to be kids, by not, like, holding their hand from point to point in the game.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, good Lord, that first game is just like, here's a world, you have a sword, good luck. And it gets better. And I would argue that, in fairness, Navi is maybe the worst of handholding, but she is also not in, like, all of the games.
I highly disagree. I think it's Faye at this point.
I never had that one. Which?
Oh, yeah, Skyward Sword.
Oh, see? This is not a problem for you.
I've been replaying Ocarina of Time this past week for this episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not that. I mean, it may be because I know where to go. Because she mainly, like, chimes in to give you a hint if you're taking too long.
Yeah, it's like 30 minutes or something.
Yeah, so maybe it's that.
But
or
it's
like,
Skyward Sword, the other Fee.
She's all over you?
She's all over
you. Oh, that's
very
worse.
Hand-holdy tutorials.
Like, let me figure it out.
Yeah. And so this is what I appreciate about the other games. Like Link to the Past is, like, it's basically just a cleaner, tighter telling of the, like, you play, it's like the original game, just they smartened up on a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And so the game goes, figure this out. And also, here are some themes that, think about them. And they're not going to get in your way to play or beat the game as a game. But the narrative is definitely relying on them to tell a story. It's also, for the record, one of the reasons that, and Jared, stop me if you've heard this before, but, like, I can't believe that we have two feature-length film Mario films.
And not one Zelda movie?
And there's never been a Zelda movie.
Especially because, like,
there are, like,
the story's there.
It's a great story.
Well, there are, like, 15 of them, and you can just pick one. You can be like, that one, that one, that one. These are all movies. Make that movie, make that movie.
Maybe that is, have you seen the guy online who, who's got Tom that plays Spider-Man?
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland. There's a guy that, like, like pretended Netflix was gonna do, made Tom Holland every character. And it works.
Yeah, I heard about
it's
that.
It's great.
Netflix
it's like
Zelda
a little
deal.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's real. I think it's fake because this guy's probably also saying, "Why haven't you done this?"
Yeah.
But maybe that's why they haven't done it. They're going to probably ruin it, and all the people that love Zelda are going to be mad.
Well, okay, so this is not a Zelda-specific conversation, but I think it would apply. I have this ongoing frustration with, like, Hollywood and video games, and I can probably logic it out, but it's just, it's like a money allergy that they have, is that, like, when you take a product that, if you ask any person who is super into video games, and you go, hey, would you like to see a movie of your favorite game? And they say, yes. What they're saying is, I would like you to make that game into a movie.
Yeah.
Not, I sure would like you to write a whole new story arc and add characters that I've never met. And, and then, like, put my character that I like into it and then just tell me that's the game movie. Mm-hmm. Because I don't already love that. I think that they're afraid that if they put what's already been made on the screen, people are going to be like, this is not new. But
that's the thing that
they
like,
want to see it anyway.
I know.
Like, that's what
like,
they want.
Stop ruining shit.
Just give me
the thing that's already good.
You can't grab a Zelda fan and be like, would you like to see an Ocarina of Time 64 movie that's basically one-to-one for the game? They would love it. They would go, yes, make it tomorrow. They would love it.
I'll watch.
I used to, when Advent...
Tom Holland is every character.
That's right. It would be... Actually, do you know what would be really great? Did you see the Princess Bride actors mashup? Okay. During COVID, a bunch of actors, A-listers, huge names, some of them the original cast, remade shot for shot The Princess Bride.
Oh, right.
I have not seen that.
It's like one scene at a time. It's all on YouTube. Like it's one long YouTube video, but like they'll go to cut from one shot to the other and it'll be like new actors, but they're all like A-listers and they're just
That's
doing
hysterical.
The Princess Bride. It's amazing.
I gotta find that.
I've watched it's the full length because it's the movie, so it's a 90-minute. You know, it's I will
Who
and
cut
the,
that together.
And like,
too.
And like, at
like
the end,
I love that.
And at the end, like Fred Savage is there in the bed.
Oh my god,
it's so good. So
the pandemic, like people just were like, yeah, that sounds great.
Oh,
let's do that.
It was so good. So, but what I mean is, I would be super on board if they did. Like, here's Ocarina of Time
shot
with
for
actors,
shot, great
shot
actors.
For shot. Yeah, they're just there's this thing about wanting to like put their stamp on a product instead of just trusting that like you're already buying a built-in audience. Just give them the thing
they already like.
There are several Halo films and there's the series.
I've never seen any of them.
You don't we'll talk after. There's some gems. Legends, there's an anthology, there's a film that's like a bunch of short films that are all Halo. That's magic.
Okay.
But that's because there are these little animated vignettes from people who love Halo. They are not a studio going, let's make a television show and we'll just like, we'll put Master Chief in it. It's not great. It's got problems.
But you're playing, you're spending 200 hours for a reason.
Minimum.
I know. Do you know what I mean? For a reason. Yeah. Why would you change something that people are already saying, yeah, I'll log
They're
that
lining
much
up.
Time for?
Yeah, yeah. That's...
So it's like, it's kind of like free money. You don't you barely have to hire a screenwriter.
And again, that's my generalized frustration. My Zelda specific one is that we have, so in that vein then, sometimes they reach for things that have, if I'm going to be honest and a little mean, like weaker narratives. So like I love Mario as a game.
Yeah.
It's a weaker story because there's not a lot to it.
Yeah. The movie's phenomenal.
The movie's really fun.
The new one was good.
And,
it was fun.
And I, as a kid who saw it as a kid, I really actually like the Bob Hoskins movie. I don't think it's a... if you're being critical, it's not like a great film, but it's fun. It's a really fun movie. Here's the deal, though. How else were they going to... What were they going to do? At the time, Mario was... There's a guy named Mario. He goes into the Mushroom Kingdom.
Sure.
There is a princess and there is a dragon. We don't really have a lot to work with, but Zelda existed and you can write a story. And so like, I think about like skip ahead because this is not, I know I'm talking about older things, but the Gran Turismo movie exists.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of based on a true story. But what I mean is if we want a narrative and a video game, most video games have a narrative.
Yeah.
You just have to pick those to make the movies about and then just steal it. Just they're licensing. Just go, We want to make your thing. Sony makes movies. Sony makes games. Yeah. They could make movies
out of
using
it
their
is,
games.
It is a little mind-boggling. It will be interesting if how long after this conversation if something Zelda does come out.
And I think you're right, though. It is also harrowing.
We're influencers.
It's oh, yeah. We made it happen.
It would be us, definitely. Yeah. We made it happen.
I do have to agree, Sheena, with you, though, that it is harrowing to consider the mismanagement of a product that you love.
And because, like, I think the budget to make it good would have to be large.
Yeah.
Because are we talking about animated? And so then you have a huge risk. Like, yeah.
Well, you're not wrong, but man, it's frustrating to watch fan things look amazing.
Yeah.
And then studio things look less amazing.
Yeah.
There's this YouTuber that I follow. Like, the YouTube name is RWAN, so Ron Links or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he uses Unreal Engine to make, like, his own Zelda-related stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he does, like, originals, or sometimes he does, like, scenes of a game. So, like, in Ocarina of Time, the legendary scene of where, like, after you get the spiritual stones, you're heading to Hyrule Castle, Zelda and Impa are running away, there's Ganondorf, right? Mm-hmm. He recreated that in, like, Unreal Engine, and it looks beautiful. Yeah. And this is just one guy.
That's true.
Or there's an animator famously who made Astartes. He made a little short film from 40K, and it looks better than any official product that Games Workshop has ever put out.
There you go.
And it took him a long time. It took him years.
Yeah, you're right. There are definitely some fan things.
No, it still costs, because, like, if you want to produce it at speed, you have to pay. That guy took, like, 2 years to make the thing. So, like, okay, they're not going to wait that long. But so they'll spend. But it can look amazing. It's I think it's when they look at the cost and then they also go, but we also want to meddle with it a bunch, and then it doesn't make money, and they go, see, you can't make those. Like, you can't make money on video games.
I wonder if there's also, like if I'm a studio, a conversation going, because Nintendo owns it, and Nintendo has a very young and youthful following, but Zelda actually has more of a adult theme.
Absolutely.
And maybe there's a fear in delving into that, and the just the mix-up of fan bases and what they're allowed to do. Nintendo might also be like, no.
Yeah, so in a live-action setting, I think they would really run that risk, right? Because it looks like fantasy, high fantasy. Yeah. So, like, you're gonna end up with, like, Lord of the Rings. We didn't practice that.
Yeah.
And I think it would be, you know, how are you gonna do a sword fight that's satisfying without scaring kids in the real space? But I wanted, way back when.
But I think that's to me that's naive. Make it look real.
I agree. Well, I think.
I don't have kids, so easy for me to say. I'm like, that's fine.
When Advent Children came out for Final Fantasy VII, that studio that produced it, I saw it and I said, give them Zelda. Like, give those people the Zelda property, because it looks great, but it's not, there's nothing untowards, and because it's animated but, like, hyper realistic, I think, like, you could sell it and it would look just as good as any cutscene, which I love. I love a good cutscene. So Zelda in other media is, you know, something to. Can I talk about the animated series, Jared?
One of the questions I have is, like, any other non-game related thing, but I did want to ask Sheena if you wanted to tell your own Zelda song story.
So, like, I think we were talking about this since we met on Three Songs.
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard because, like I said, I got back into it, like, as an adult. I was like, so I think my song story would have to be the remix of the Zelda theme song that they play on Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. I got my Switch. Mm-hmm. This was, like, immediately my favorite run. And I was like, why do I know this? Like, what is this Zelda? Like, is this, what's? And I like started immediately only playing as Link.
Yeah.
And
me too.
Going straight to this guy.
Come on, like, all of us. Yeah.
And then I'm just like earning the, like, matching, glider and all that.
Yep.
And then I'm like, once I kind of figured out that this was Zelda, which is so funny because it's such a remix with a really, like, electric guitar wailing.
Steve Vai.
Yeah. And anyway, so I think it would be this, and because it brought me back to Zelda. It brought me back to loving it and getting Breath of the Wild and really starting to kind of fall back in love with the whole storyline and the whole movement of it.
So I'm assuming Mario Kart 8 was your first Switch game.
Yes.
Wow.
It was, because I got the package that it came with.
I can see the roundabout in the Hyrule Castle, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to hit the, so you can go through the sword.
Yeah. You know? That little extra boost.
That little extra boost guy.
Yeah.
My wife's actually really good at Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And so she'll play this with me sometimes. And then I'm upset because I'm like, I should be better at this than you. I am the gamer of us.
Yeah.
But she does kick my ass often. Just like, not always, but often.
Just like start memorizing only this one track. Mm-hmm. Only Hyrule Circuit.
That's it. That's the only thing we're playing is Hyrule Circuit. She'd be like, what? But yeah. So yeah, I think it would be that. That would be the song.
Yeah.
Because I think it recognized like every da 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 da.
And you also hear like a metal version of Zelda's Lullaby within that.
Yes,
too,
it's
you
like,
know?
Like
yeah,
it's a little mix match.
Reference melodies are so gorgeous.
They're great, and I think that the whole remix of it is like, you know, really kind of funny and like fun and bright. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it would be that. That would be my song.
Yeah.
Brought me back.
So, hey, yeah.
You know, it's pretty funny in a cart.
Yeah, right. It's too kiddy, like a grown man. You know?
my daughter still cannot reliably beat me. But I have to admit, there is trepidation whenever I see her.
She's getting there.
Creeping up. Yeah. Because
she's gonna beat you.
I know it's
pretty
gonna happen.
Quick.
Yeah, we still have long running bouts on Smash.
Oh, that's
yeah.
fun.
Because in that same Zelda and that, you know, the same Zelda love when the first Smash Brothers came out, I was like, oh my god, I can play a fighting game, which I love.
With all these eight characters.
No, I don't, but I only needed one.
You only like, need one.
And so I got really good with Link. Mm-hmm. I would set the computer to 3v1 me, and I would set it on 9, and I would and it would turn all the items off just so that it was just like this grueling thing, and I played and played and played and played. And like when I was in college here, like that was when I was in, you know, like middle school, but like when I was in college here, there would be like Smash tournaments.
Yeah.
And they would bring out Melee or no,
Brawl.
Brawl. Yeah. They would, because I just call it Super Smash Brothers. They would bring it out with the 64s and it was like, wow. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And I would just destroy everything. I take all of those skills and then, what is the current one?
Ultimate.
Yeah. So Ultimate's out and I'm playing it with Zoe and I pick Link and his moves are all wrong because it's not, it's Toon Link.
It's Toon Link.
Is the one that I...
There's Breath of the Wild Link, Toon Link, and Young Link.
Oh, it's Young Link maybe. Yeah. All of the moves that I knew are in a different Link now. And so I figure that out and I start playing with her, but she is a monster. And she will capitalize on items in a way that is just, it's effectively terrorism.
Oh my gosh,
like, she's
so funny.
Rude with the way that she uses bombs and all the bullshit that are not in, like, because I played it like a fighting game. She's not playing that game. She's playing a game where she pushes me off of a train.
Yeah.
And she hooks me to a hang glider and I go flying. Like, it's a different, She's playing a different
thing
game.
Than you.
And so I will lose to my daughter at that game.
Yeah, I would lose too. I'm not good
regularly. Yeah,
there's too many things going.
That's
on.
What I'm saying. Like when,
like where'd you get that hang glider?
When we're on the Star Fox,
Corneria.
No,
or the Star Fox.
Yeah, we're on a really flat open level, or when we're on Hyrule Castle from the original one, and there's not a lot of bullshit on the screen.
Yeah,
I knock her around. Like it's not even close. But suddenly there's a lot, and there are a lot of levels that are really small.
Yeah,
and I just. Yeah, so when we're playing Mario Kart, she's still, you know, I bring the blue sparks, you know, like it's not,
yeah.
But
I bring the blue
and sometimes
sparks.
And sometimes she makes you know tactical choices that are questionable, but
yeah.
But I see her creeping up sometimes and
yeah.
You know,
that's so
it's
funny.
A thing, so.
Do you guys remember Soul Calibur?
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Yeah.
Thank you! Like, thank you so much for bringing
another
it up.
Reason to own a GameCube.
I loved that. And
I've
like,
been playing Soul Calibur
Link
2
was
recently.
Yes.
Only as Link, of course.
But only on Link. But only on the GameCube.
Only on the GameCube.
Yep, I had that.
Yeah. PlayStation's got Heihachi from Tekken, which is just a different fighting game guy, so it feels kind of weak.
And Xbox has Spawn?
Xbox had Darth Vader.
Just so you know.
Didn't it have Darth Vader?
I think one of them did.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're
man.
Awesome.
I loved that game. I remember like playing that, being Link.
Yeah.
Occasionally. Could he be Yoda?
Yes.
In one of them, yeah.
Yes.
I don't think I had that one, though, because I had a GameCube.
So I think, if I'm remembering right, maybe PlayStation had Darth Vader and the Xbox had Yoda. and Nintendo had Link, and that was enough. You didn't need two characters. I do seem to remember Spawn somewhere in there. Yeah,
Spawn was in a game.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
anyway,
but yeah.
There's a Link. Lovely Link memory playing Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Link. I just searched it up. So Soul Calibur 2, there was Heihachi, Link, and Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting to me. Soul Calibur 3 was Cosmos from Xeno Saga.
Wow. Oh right.
Soul Calibur Legends, Lloyd Irving with Tales of Symphonia, I think.
Yep.
And Soul Calibur 4 had Vader, Yoda, The Apprentice, and Angle Fear.
Yeah.
There you go.
So really 2 was
so
the one that was
basically
really
Soul
doing
Calibur 2 is where it peaks.
Yeah, yeah.
It really was. Oh yeah.
Also, in that game and in Smash, I always, as much as I love him, I always did feel like Link is kind of like a bastard because everybody else is like using either superpowers or just their wits. And he's like, I have a bomb and I have a bow and I have a hook shot. Like, and he brings a sword to a fight. Like Mario's there with his fist and he's like, bring a sword.
Yeah.
And but in a fighting game, even with one with weapons like Soul Calibur, Link's like arrow and his bombs always felt so great because it was just this bag of tricks.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, man. He's got the never-ending pouch of goodies.
Oh, well, so like
which ties into the animated series. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that too. So what I was going to say was it also ties into kind of one of the ongoing themes in the games, which is you always start with nothing and then you build up this inventory of special abilities.
This arsenal.
And like, it's kind of a really pretty arc that's in almost all of the games that you're really familiar with, but then they find interesting ways to do it over and over again.
Hmm.
Okay, so the animated series. Did you watch the animated series, Sheena, when you were...
I did not. I don't think.
Well, excuse me, princess. Man. That's like the line.
He had a catchphrase.
I've
80s and 90s.
Forced myself
to
watch all of it.
It's a good show.
Okay.
It's not a critically good... It's not... Okay, let me couch all of this.
I did not watch
If you
this.
Watch cartoons in that era, it was a good show because it was indistinguishable from every other cartoon.
That's fair.
Like, that's what they were like, okay? So don't judge it on today's cartoon. It's not Gravity Falls, okay?
So what kind of personality did Zelda
that's,
have?
Okay, this is part of one of the things that didn't make it super. Actually, Zelda was great.
Like,
she was actually really competent. Link was not great.
What was his personality?
He was a douche.
Which,
that's a good way to put it.
Really? Because when you said, well, excuse
that's,
me,
that's
is
his
that
catch,
his?
That's his catchphrase.
That's his catchphrase.
So, okay, so here's the setup. First of all, I don't want you to do this from memory. I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to answer it like a civilian, Sheena.
Okay.
There's this magic item called a Triforce. How many parts are there?
Three.
Yeah, right? Like, you don't need to use your Zelda knowledge
no.
for that. Okay, there are two pieces of the Triforce.
Well, hold on.
In this universe.
Hold on a second.
So,
hold on.
What?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yes.
In the original Zelda 1, there are only two.
Yeah, I know. I didn't say they didn't
is
get
the,
it from...
Is
I,
the listen, argument that Link is the third piece?
No, it's nothing.
There's
as good.
Nothing.
Only wisdom
deep.
And power.
Yeah, so...
Oh, wow, that's not good. That's
in the
great.
Kingdom of Hyrule...
We don't love that.
Magic is really common. Like regular people are like, I use magic for laundry. Like, it's very common, right? Okay, Zelda's kingdom has held these pieces of the Triforce. Ganon has gotten his hands on one of them, power. And wisdom is the other half. It's the only way I can say it.
Yep.
Is the other half. And Ganon wants the other half, and Zelda then wants to get the other half back. And, you know, it's a Monster of the Week thing, so every week, Ganon is, you know, he's like, here's my plot to get the thing. So, Link is basically a mercenary. Like, he's a hired sword who lives in the castle, and his job is to protect the Triforce and Zelda from these incursions. So this is an okay like setup for a Saturday morning cartoon.
I mean, it's not too far off from the actual
pamphlet. It's pretty close, right? So here's the deal though. It would appear in all of its 80s glory that Link is not in this for the money. He is super into Zelda, and this is an opportunity to flirt all the time.
Yeah.
And it is an opportunity for her to kind of rebuff his advances, but she kind of likes him because he's okay.
How problematic.
And then
how 2023 problematic.
And then to add a weird like complication into this dynamic, he has a
fairy.
Permanent fairy
Pixie
who is named Pixie, right? Sprite.
And, or was it Sprite?
It's Sprite.
Yeah.
Because that's a great video game joke, right?
Yep.
Like, pixies are called sprites, but also it's a video game sprite. Like, and she is, you know, she's like a little sidekick character, but she is into Link a lot. So she's always, like, trying to separate them. right? Like she'll trip Zelda so she falls in the mud so that Link doesn't get to talk to her. Like it's just, you know, it's Saturday morning cartoon nonsense.
Yes.
Often, Zelda plays... So the reason that I agree with you that it has, like, a lot of those 80s problematic tropes, but the reason that it plays kind of okay when I watch it now is because Zelda is very competent, and she seems to have the upper hand in all of these exchanges.
Which I like that.
Yeah, so,
which
like...
It's very Zelda.
It is very Zelda. Yeah, because she's... Well, she's... So... Link is... He's a badass with it.
She's
got
demure,
the,
but...
She's demure, yes. But she's always, like... You know, she calls him hero derisively all the time.
Oh, okay.
She's like, nice work, hero. And then he'll say, well, excuse me, princess. It's a Han Solo Leia setup. Okay. This is what they've got. They've got Han Solo Leia going. It'd be if Chewbacca was also in love with Han Solo. Like that. Like this is basically the dynamic they have. It's the actual episode-to-episode dynamics are pretty fun. You know, he's got the sword. He's got... I love how they deal with items, so which is what you made you think of, right? He's got... in this show, they all have little pouches that hold... They're like bags of holding from D&D. Like, they hold way more stuff than they could.
Because
everything's tiny. So they will reach into the pouch and take out, like, a little hand-sized, like, bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And, like... Because I think it's even in the opening sequence. Like, and like Zelda can like throw it, and Link will go like, and it'll become like a bow and arrow. Like when he catches it.
Nice.
So it's because it's, you know, they're trying to play with the video game stuff.
Yeah,
it's fun, and if you like Zelda, it's fun to watch. What I always wanted was there's this thing in the opening sequence that he does that I was always like, I wish there was a way to gamify that, because it looks so cool to be able to do it instead of see it. And they're falling towards water at the end, like from high, and Link shoots the beam from his sword twice into the water before they hit it, and it makes big splashes that lets him kind of like tumble onto land, but Zelda falls right in the water. And then that's where she says, I think, like, nice work, hero, and he says, excuse me. But it's like, it's such a great little, like, that and the bomb. He does a lot of really cool stuff that I feel like the animators were playing with. He needs to get far fast, so he throws a bomb in front of him and jumps on it with his shield and
jumps,
it sends him flying. And that's not something you see until Breath of the Wild, which I can't believe is not, like, influenced by this old cartoon show.
There's a lot of cool add-ons like that in Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, because it's basically like an engine.
Just the way
it's a play engine, right?
It like plays. There's just so much freedom that every player will do something different.
They've made all kinds of nonsense.
It's pretty
cool. You can literally fuse a bomb to your shield and
fly.
Do exactly that.
Yeah. Well, people, it's really, really interesting.
Didn't people make like planes? Basically,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
If,
oh, yeah.
As long as you keep cooking,
make an X-wing.
Yeah, as long as you keep cooking.
Oh, it's pretty incredible. I do not build very well, but it's really fun.
Yeah,
you know. But to that,
yes,
we were talking about movies and the daunting task of a feature film with Link is that he really, like, it's strange that they made him be a douchebag when he doesn't talk often.
Yes, this is one of the only...
Stoic is his brand.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine would actually make the screenwriting in a movie maybe more difficult.
It depends on the iteration. So this is something I wanted to bring up, and you're great. You've been killing up the segues, Sheena.
Oh, just call me Segway.
So I wanted to ask, like, your guys' favorite iterations of the Bane 3, Ganon, Ganondorf, Zelda, and Link. And for that conversation of, like, what version, what's a good version for a Link for a movie, I think Ocarina of Time, it's like... You know, he's what, 10, right? When you start off, he has the body of a 17-year-old, but the mind of a 10-year-old, you know? So I think that can, like, add for a good dynamic of, like, oh, yeah, when he travels to the future, there's this guy, there's this, air quotes, grown man, but still has, like, this wonder of a kid and the curiosity or something. You know, I think that's a good way to play on it.
Yeah,
so,
that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I tend to agree. I think that if we're taking them in you know, attached groups, right? Because, like, you could say, like, this is my favorite Ganon, this is my favorite, you know. But, like, if I'm taking them in attached groups, I think that the Ocarina 3 set there is maybe the best because, one, boy, is there something about the hand markers that does something to me, right? That they've got the glowing Triforce on their hands for each of the elements that they occupy. Like, something about that really hooked into my heart when they introduced it. But also, you know, I love, even having not played it, the buddy cop setup in Breath of the Wild, right? That like that Zelda is a companion.
It's a great
in this
Zelda.
Thing. I really like this idea, and I also like her design, like the short hair with the blue. I think she's gorgeous, but. So, like, I think you're lacking that in the Zelda, technically, in Ocarina. But in Ocarina, you get Sheik. And I think that Zelda is a cool idea because, not only because, you know, she's cool and she becomes a hero.
Yeah.
But because she's also, like, she's basically, like, running an underground resistance.
Thank you.
Like it's this, it's
That's
that
cool.
People think she is still trapped. It's not that they're like, Zelda got away, and now
and
we don't
know. And
what
a surprise for people who don't know anything about the game, and they think that Zelda is this helpless princess.
Yes,
thank
and
you.
And then to watch, so that I would I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think in Breath of the Wild, the buddy cop thing does make them a bit ageless, where you don't have,
it's so fun.
You're not really sure how
old
they are.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's fun. That's fun.
Especially knowing like 100 years before the Calamity, Zelda resented Link.
Right.
You know, Link reminded her of her own failures to unlock her power until Link saves her from the Yiga, then she starts falling in love with him, which is also a good thing. It's like a will they, won't they type of thing. In Tears of the Kingdom, there's kind of like
when you're talking about a full adult film, I think that some of those play, live action type play would play really well.
And then, good God, Ocarina's Ganondorf is maybe, I mean,
that's,
the desert prince.
That's a,
like, he's perfect. The red hair, the cape, the black horse.
To ask for like a favorite Ganondorf specifically, not talking about Ganon, it's unfair because for Ocarina, Twilight, Wind Waker, they're all the same person.
Yeah.
So, you know, but still, like, even this new Ganondorf in Tears of the Kingdom, we don't know if it's the same one from Ocarina, but there's a lot going there. I think a lot of people love, absolutely love Twilight Princess's version of Zelda because, she's like, you know, she's a cool, hardened, ready to fight princess, ready to defend her kingdom. But like, as soon as Zant comes into the throne room with his Twilight monster, surrenders immediately. I mentioned that I was replaying Ocarina of Time this past week, and I just had this, I guess, epiphany, or I don't know what else to call it, but this realization of Ocarina of Time Zelda is super badass, and I think she's very underrated.
Yeah. Well, she's underrated because for the first arc, she's, first of all, she's
just a kid.
Well, they're both, so they're both kids. He's got a sword, and she has nothing. She's just stuck in the castle, and then she gets kidnapped, and then you don't really see her again in that incarnation.
Yeah.
Right? But Sheik's doing shit.
Sheik is so cool. Such a great character. And yeah, the reveal of that, when I first saw that, I was like, holy shit, what?
Yeah.
This has been Zelda this whole time? Spoilers, I guess.
Well, I like that too. It just goes to show like the storyline of Zelda as a whole, like each storyline. It is odd that it hasn't become a movie. It's like, these are great storylines. There's, like he said, just grab one.
Jared.
Pick it.
Yes. I'm gonna, you know, sometimes I'll say a thing and then we'll be like, oh my God, didn't we say that they should do that and they did it? I will say the thing, and if it happens, I won't want any credit, I'll just be happy. They should make a Sheik game that takes place in the
7 years
timeline that you end up erasing by saving the world, that starts with however Zelda got away, like you have to get away, and ends when you meet Link, having come out of the out of the temple.
Oh man,
because,
that
because
would
you don't
be
need
really
because that's all we need is to get from there to there. But there, like for 7 years, she waged like war.
There was
in a kingdom that was already defeated.
There was a few years ago, I think during the pandemic.
Yeah.
There was a big giant Nintendo like leak, and there was concept art for a Sheik solo game.
Yeah.
And I think it was supposed to be within that time period. But yeah, like, freaking this kid starts off, like, yeah, she tells you what to do, and then she trains for seven long, hard years, watching her kingdom get destroyed and taken over by this demon king. She becomes an amazing,
She's a ninja. Yeah.
That's great.
And, yeah. You give it, like, give it to the people who make Tenchu. Or Splinter Cell, like make it a stealth action game.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna be honest, ready? Like, imagine the moment, right? After you've had a big fight at the end, and like you've forgotten kind of that this is a Zelda kind of a game, right? And then like the temple opens up and Link steps out in the green.
Oh yeah.
And like he's like, what? And then you're there.
This is gonna happen. Everyone's listening to this.
I hope they make it.
Manifestation.
We have a lot of pull.
I don't want a single cent. I just want to play it.
And most other incarnations of Zelda gets kidnapped in the beginning of the game or like something happens.
Just comatose.
And, right? But like this one Zelda, this Ocarina of Time version, has been working for 7 years trying to take back her kingdom. And like it's like the only other one that can hold a candle, I think, to like a amazing Zelda is Wind Waker and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Because Breath of the Wild, she's gone, but like she's holding the Calamity.
Yeah.
She's holding Ganon within the castle.
Seriously,
right?
The kingdom, there's a great storyline happening too that I don't actually know the end of.
Oh, okay, yeah. But so, it's going to be great.
I'm excited to see because there is more to the story than just like, oh.
Yeah.
Although I do love the, there's these like funny little like short clip TikToks and stuff of being like, your one purpose, Link, is to save Zelda.
Oh, and then he's doing all the nonsense.
Okay, after this.
Yeah. Koroks and all
cooking
that.
Stuff.
Yeah. And Wind Waker.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
And Wind Waker Zelda, like, when she's Tetra, you know, another homage to Sheik, she doesn't know she's Zelda, but yet she's still doing her pirate duties and still being a badass.
There's definitely, I think, a lot of room for some great storylines. Yeah. Like, I would love to see a movie made.
Yeah.
I'll call some people.
Cool.
Get it done.
Do the music. Yeah.
You could play a track on a Zelda product.
Bro.
That might change my new dream writing gig. I told him my dream writing gig is to write for Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
They're funny.
I love that show.
That's my favorite show.
The I think the first three seasons of Bob's Burgers are, I know, like scene for scene.
Yeah.
I think they're the funniest of the show.
I would say.
And we, Chrissy and I, my wife and I both, we really like a lot of the like the ad-libbed incidental jokes that are clearly the cast just like like riffing, and those are really prevalent in those first three seasons.
Yeah.
And they're so good. And again, my daughter knows all the words to the Thomas Edison. They say Thomas Edison is the man to get us into this century. And that man is me. Like that, we know all of Topsy.
I love that show a lot. But if Zelda gets made, that'll be the next one. That'll be my new writing gig dream.
To come for a landing, I want to ask you guys. You can start, Sheena. Your favorites, like non video game related Zelda thing. It doesn't have to be canon. It can be like fan made. It can be anything.
Currently, my favorite thing is Tom Holland as every character. I know that's very fresh and new, but it is hysterical and also like, yeah, that works.
Yeah.
And something about the fact that yeah, that works is so funny to me.
Yeah.
And they're doing it as a slight because I guess someone gave them like, well, we're sick of seeing Tom Holland as every character. And it was like, well, I'll give you Tom Holland as every character. And I'm like, he makes a great Zelda.
I wouldn't.
And Ganondorf.
I wouldn't be upset if he was Link, honestly.
I will send you guys the video when I
find
it. Because it's legit good and he looks like a great Link.
Yeah.
Also like ominously aged.
Right.
Like, and all, like, it's really, really, yes, it's really great. So I'm going to have to say that my favorite non-canon currently is Tom Holland as every character.
Okay, so not counting the animated series that we talked about, I'm going to go far afield from your expectation here. I can taste the breakfast cereal. In my head, in my mouth, I can taste the cereal that was the Zelda cereal.
Oh my goodness!
It's in there.
I must Google this.
I can feel it. Oh yeah. Well, so here's the deal. There was the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, which had the live segments, which were basically segues, framing devices for animated, you know, cartoon vignettes of Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. Those, I don't know the production schedule for it. Here's what I know. It aired every day at whatever 2, but on Fridays, it was Zelda in that slot. And so, it's, and Captain N, the game master.
Right.
And so, every Monday to Thursday, you got Mario. Friday was special because you had Kevin, Captain N, the Game Master, and you had Zelda. And so those were once a week, so they felt special. All of these products had, you know, Chef Boyardee noodles and cereals.
Oh, yeah.
And I can taste, like, I can see the Zelda cereal. And so my favorite product is probably that, because I can't believe that it stuck with me that way. But, like, yeah, it's real for me. Like, I can feel it.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is there's this artist that I follow on Instagram that does, like, comics and stuff. You know, they do their own comics, and their big one is called Linked Universe, where it's kind of like a Spider-Verse type of deal, but with all the different links within one Hyrule. So it's not from every single game, because some games it's the same link, but every different specific iteration of Link somehow, for some reason, are in one universe, one Hyrule. And the story doesn't, like, go far. It's still in the making and stuff like that. Like, they're taking their time with it. I've been following it for years now, since high school. And it's just a concept that I absolutely love. Like, what if for all the time travel shenanigans that happens within the Zelda universe, all these links, like, meet and try to figure out what's, like, the big bad, what are all the Ganondorfs or whatever. And I think it's fascinating for, like, that concept alone. Link's universe, it goes well. It's, like, a nice story, how they interact with each other, the way that artist styles them. It's, like, references to multiple parts of the game. So, like, the Minish Cap Link can also use the four swords. I think that's the same Link.
Right.
And the tunic is not just a normal green tunic. It has green, red, blue, and purple patches
because
of four swords. Yeah. And Ocarina's, the Hero of Time, he's wearing his armor from Twilight Princess when he's the hero Shade,
for example.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like,
cool.
Is that whole combination thing that I think is fascinating.
It is cool.
I think that's also, that's a great concept for a story, because it really taps into one of the Zelda things of Zelda that sets it apart from other games. So I often talk about Zelda and Final Fantasy at the same time because they're both products that have many iterations, but they're not mostly iterations, right? Like, Final Fantasy 7 and 5 and 2 are not the same game.
Yeah.
They're not related in any meaningful way. They're just stories. And Zelda is similar in that way that, like from game to game to game, it's different.
But they're all in the same... But
the themes repeat themselves.
Yeah.
And not just the themes of gameplay, like collecting special items, which are often the same special items.
Yeah.
Collecting stones, getting a special sword, fighting, you know, this giant pig monster. Like, they have their, like, inside the narrative of that universe, these people have the same themes. There is a hero of courage. There is a princess that is magical.
Of wisdom.
There is a, like, an evil, power-hungry villain. The Triforce is, like, the culmination of all of the elements that they need to push through these problems. The hero has to travel all through the kingdom and, like, meet, interact with, and, you know, like, get resources from, like, the people in that kingdom.
Yeah.
These are themes that are not necessarily gameplay. They're story themes, and they're in, like, all of these games. And I think that there's something about... Because most games do not have this kind of recurring element to them.
Right.
And I think that it's almost a meta element, because you could say that all the Zelda games are stories that people in Hyrule tell.
Right.
Because everybody's like, how is our kingdom formed? Well, let me tell you, there was once this princess.
Yeah.
And then somebody else says, well, Uncle whatever says it different. Well, let me tell you, there was once this princess.
Like, that's why there's a legend.
But they're all similar, because there is, like, a through line.
Yeah.
And Link is, like, this through line through all of these things. I think that that's something special to it. Yeah.
He's the Link.
The Link. Yeah.
Link
so.
Is the Link.
And that just adds to, like, there's a Zelda formula, right, that everybody playing looks forward to.
Yeah.
But things can still be different, but yet the same, whereas Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom don't follow the, like, dungeon crawling item getting formula, but there are still elements that are in previous games that still continue.
Yeah. And so that's why I think that thing, the comic you're talking about, is so clever, because it's playing with that idea, right? Like, we recognize this character is these characters, this character is these characters, so they're not only, like, canonically linked, not to pun it up too much, but also that, like, these universes have this meshing,
yeah,
that's not, they're not the same guy, they're not different guys either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another property that does it, but I can't.
So, as we head in for a landing, any final thoughts before we go?
Well, what a fun conversation. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much for joining. This is
people usually want to talk to me about writing and music, and yeah. It's like really fun to talk about something that I do just because I enjoy it. Oh, yeah. No other reason. So,
I think that people play games for different reasons. I play them because I love a good story and I love a good hurdle. And Zelda might be one of the epitomes of balancing on those two things. Yeah. So it does both of those in spades. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for joining me on this episode of Razzle Dazzle. This Zelda episode clearly means, Zelda clearly means a lot to all of us. And I'm so happy to share this moment, this conversation with you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, that's all the time we have for today, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode here on Razzle Dazzle. Please let us know what you think of this episode somewhere on the internet. If you want to hear more from Richard and the rest of the Three Song Stories crew, follow at Three Song Stories on Instagram and Facebook. If you want to know where you can find Sheena and her music, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, and follow her on Instagram at Sheena Brooke, at The Sheena Brooke on Twitter/X, and at Sheena Brooke on TikTok. And special thanks to Michael and Game Chops for letting us use their music for this episode. You can find these tracks and more on Spotify, Amazon, and YouTube by searching up Game Chops and/or Zelda Lo-Fi. Links to their socials and playlists will be in the description down below. And we'll catch you on the next one.